Welcome to the Resilient Mind Podcast. I'm Sam Bowler, and I'll be your co-host along with my wife, Natalie. Natalie is a licensed professional counselor in Nashville, Tennessee. She works primarily with survivors of complex trauma and specializes in dissociative disorders. The Resilient Mind is a platform for us and our guests to play our part in the bigger conversation around mental health. Specifically, we would like to raise awareness and understanding of complex trauma and dissociative disorders. So, whether you're a survivor yourself or you just stumbled upon this podcast, welcome to the conversation. We're glad you're here.
So I just want to give a trigger warning that very, very briefly, I will be talking about something that could be triggering for anybody who has been recorded against their will or recorded when abuse is happening.
So in today's episode, we wanted to get into a little bit more detail about telehealth and some of the challenges that that's presenting. A lot of people are in a position right now where that's really their only option for therapy. And so Natalie, can you speak to what some of those challenges are for some clients who are trauma survivors to try to navigate telehealth?
Yes. And I just want to start by acknowledging that if you're feeling like it's not the same as meeting in person, I think we do need to acknowledge that reality. I don't think we should pretend that it's just the same. And so I just want to validate that, yes, that does feel different. I think in some instances, for people who have abandonment issues in their background, it can feel like if you're being asked to switch to telehealth and not given the choice of in-person versus telehealth, it can feel a little bit like abandonment for some people. And I think that is valid and can completely understand how that could bring up similar feelings to being abandoned. I know at my practice, I unfortunately had a conference and ended up on the way home, and well, I guess really more the day that I got back, felt really, really sick. And so I had already sent out emails saying that I was starting to make the transition to telehealth, but that it was still an option to do in person. And part of that was in the hopes of being able to do a temporary goodbye to in person and talk about the transition. And unfortunately, I wasn't able to do that because I was really sick for actually over a week. And so I think absolutely abandonment issues can be stirred up. And if it was done in an abrupt way, which, you know, with the coronavirus pandemic that's happening right now, it seems like every day presents a new normal. And so things are always changing and evolving, and it tends to happen very quickly. So a lot of you may be in positions where it feels like things changed all of a sudden and you didn't get a whole lot of notice or warning, which is not ideal for trauma survivors. And so I think that's something that is great to talk about with your therapist, like that feeling of abandonment that might be getting triggered. I know that for me and a lot of therapists, telehealth is not our first choice in how we do therapy. And so I know that my intention absolutely is not for anybody to feel abandoned. I want people to feel like I'm still here for them, but I can completely understand why that feeling may be there. I think another reason that telehealth can be really difficult for some people is anybody who has been recorded against their will or recorded when abuse has been happening to them. Doing telehealth can feel really, really triggering because it feels like I might be getting recorded right now. And so again, that makes a lot of sense why that would be triggering. And so I think something to think about is ways that telehealth is different than being abused in the past. So I think also if it's a therapist that you have worked with for a while and that you have come to trust in some ways, to think about it as a different relationship and a different kind of situation. But another thing that I think is really helpful, and I think I mentioned this in another podcast possibly, but this was recommended to me by Lynette Danilchuk, but just that if you're on video and you have the ability, kind of experiment with your therapist around what does it feel like when you have control of turning your camera on and off? And what does it feel like for you to ask your therapist to turn their camera off and then turn it back on? And noticing that this time you are in control of those things and how different that can feel. I've done that with some people, and that's felt really good to them to feel in control of that and to notice how different that feels. I have also had the issue come up of clients not liking seeing themselves as they're talking to me. And I think even as therapists, this can feel a little bit strange because when we're doing therapy sessions, we're not usually staring at ourselves. And so I think, you know, that can bring up shame. It can just feel uncomfortable. You might feel kind of preoccupied with looking at yourself when you're trying to talk to your therapist. And so there are some different ways to deal with this. I think ultimately we're working towards self-compassion and being able to look at ourselves when we're on video and that sort of thing. But an option, if that's really bothering you, is to put a sticky note over the picture of yourself or the video of yourself, or put a phone up in front of that picture. Either way, finding some way to cover it if that feels more comfortable to you to start out with. I think that there is a difference in what it feels like to actually be in the room with somebody. And if you know that therapist really cares about you, you can actually feel the presence, their connection, their care for you in the room. And so it is true that when you're not in the same room with them, it might feel a little bit different. You might feel a little bit disconnected at first because it's not the same. And so I think a way of dealing with this, and this is something you can just use in general if you are missing your therapist or missing meeting in person, is to notice what does it feel like when you pull into the parking lot of their office? What does it feel like when you walk into the building? What does it feel like? What do you see when you walk into their waiting room and you're sitting there and waiting? And then what does it feel like when you see them warmly greet you and ask you to come back to their office? Just notice really what it feels like to be in that setting, to be with them, knowing that they're happy to see you. And then just notice what it feels like as you sit down on their couch or in their chair or however their office is set up. And notice what you see as you look around. Notice what sounds do you hear. So in their office, do they have a sound machine that you can hear? Do they have music playing that you can hear? Notice what it smells like in their office. You can notice like the texture of their couch, and really just what does it feel like to be with them in their presence, to feel connected with them. And part of what we're doing here is developing secure attachment. And so I have clients who struggle with feeling like if they don't see me in front of them, that it's almost as if I don't exist. And so I think this is a common thing for people who have trauma or attachment issues in their background. And so if you really try and visualize and see and feel what it feels like to be with them, I think that's, you know, a way to start to develop object permanence, which is basically the feeling of even when that person's not there, I can still know that they're there and feel that. I think a lot of trauma therapists have a lot of sensory objects or just sensory things to help with grounding in their office. And so I think it can be helpful as you're doing your session for you to have things like fidgets, maybe like a stuffed animal that feels comforting or a really soft blanket. It could be things like a plant that feels comforting to you. You might actually even be able to have your pet with you, which may be a unique situation that you're not able to do in person. So that could be really great for grounding. If by chance your therapist has anything with them that is from their office, I think that can also be helpful. So I have a bunch of clients that really like this pillow that I have in my office. And so that's something that when I was able to, I brought it home from my office, and I will bring it on screen just as a reminder of what it feels like there. I think something else that's really important to take into consideration is if you are doing your telehealth sessions from your bed and you're talking about trauma, that can really cause some people to associate their bed with past trauma experiences, which then makes your bed feel unsafe. So I usually recommend people trying to find a spot in the house that feels most safe and a spot that also is not a place where you sleep, which I know can be complicated because maybe your bedroom is the safest place that you feel. But we definitely don't want to associate where we're sleeping with trauma memories.
Would it be, I guess, an option for some people to maybe set up a makeshift area in their bedroom if they have to use their bedroom that's not their bed, but maybe just put a chair somewhere and get comfortable?
Yeah, I think that's a great alternative. It's almost like that idea of don't do your homework in your bed. Your bed should be associated with sleeping and that sort of thing. Another thing that is important to think about is like if you are seeing your therapist face up really close and it feels a little bit too close, you can either move back from the screen or you can ask them to move back just a little bit. And along similar lines, notice the volume on your computer or on your phone if you're doing a telehealth session. I think sometimes I certainly worry about whether clients can hear me or not. And so I probably talk much louder than I do in session. And so if your volume is turned up really loud, it could feel like I'm yelling at you when I'm really not and have no intention of yelling at you. But I can see that feeling really scary for some people. I think doing some kind of check-in at the beginning and at the end of your session to just talk about how do you feel at the beginning? How do you feel as you're sitting there on screen and noticing how different it feels, maybe feeling a little bit anxious or having a longing to be in person? And then maybe at the end, possibly it wasn't quite as bad as you were expecting. And so maybe checking in with how it feels at the end of a session can be really helpful as well. Another thing, and I mentioned this before, this was mentioned in one of Pat Ogden's online trainings, but to create some sort of ritual at the beginning and at the end that you can do with your therapist. So maybe, for example, you pick a song at the beginning that's really meaningful to you, and that's how you start the session, by playing the song and sharing that with your therapist. And then maybe at the end you play the same song, or maybe even your therapist can choose a song at the end. I think that's another way to create a ritual at the beginning and end of sessions. I think something to be prepared for is if you have complex trauma or if you have a history of dissociation, your therapist might seem a little bit like they're asking you a lot of questions and checking in with you way more than they typically do. And the reason that we do that is because we can't see your whole body. And it's not that we're, you know, examining you or staring at you the whole time, but we are much more able to track what's going on in your body. And when you're doing telehealth, we can only see a lot of times mostly like your face and your shoulders and that sort of thing. And so you might notice that we're asking, do you feel present? Are you okay? Does this feel tolerable to you? Let me know if this feels like too much. And I think that's just because we want to make sure that we're doing this in a safe way. And so we're checking in a lot more than we might in person. I think another thing to be aware of is if you do start to get overwhelmed, to have some things in mind that you can talk about that don't feel quite as distressing, almost as a way of distracting yourself. And that's a way to keep yourself within your window of tolerance. Absolutely an issue for some survivors might be that they live in the home with somebody who doesn't feel safe, or they live in the home with somebody who's a perpetrator or a past perpetrator from childhood. And so doing teletherapy in your house may not really be an option. So I think an alternative to that could be driving to an empty parking lot or driving to a parking lot and trying to find a place where there aren't really any other people around and you can have your privacy and do your session in that way. So, and for anybody who has DID and is either working at home or maybe has kids at home, you might notice that you need to focus more on present day issues and wrap up sessions a little bit earlier and that kind of thing, because maybe you're returning to your children or you're returning to work, and typically you would have that car ride home to really get back to a place of feeling comfortable. You know, doing daily living type of things. So if that's something that you need, I think that's absolutely okay and definitely a good focus to have right now. Along those lines, it can also be helpful to just be more focused on safety and stabilization right now. So it's possible that you have been in the middle of trauma work and you're feeling really overwhelmed and beyond really your capacity to handle much more. And so if you need to focus on safety and stabilization, that is absolutely okay, because right now we are all in this collective trauma that's bringing up feelings of helplessness, hopelessness, feeling a lack of control and unpredictability, which are all themes that are common in trauma experiences. And so not only are you dealing with what's going on right now, you are also dealing with past experiences of trauma. So if you try and work on past issues, the stuff that's going on right now is going to exacerbate the intensity of the feelings. And I don't want to say that's true across the board, because I know that some people are ready to do some of their work and don't want to feel like they have to put that on hold right now. And some people might feel like, well, what's the point? I was in the middle of something, or I was just about to get started on something. And so it is possible that if your therapist feels comfortable and you feel comfortable, that trauma work could proceed. I know I did a few trauma therapy sessions this week for people who felt ready, and they went really, really well. And so I think it really is dependent on your individual situation and how you're being affected by what's going on today. You might also, before you even go into a therapy session, want to do something that I've been calling like a corona container, where you put any feelings related to what's going on right now into a container. And that's something you could actually, if that's the focus of what you're working on in therapy, then maybe that's better to use at the end. For some clients, they want to be working on other things. And so maybe they want to do a 5-minute check-in of what's going on today and go back into other work. And so the Corona container could definitely be helpful for that. Just putting any feelings of helplessness, hopelessness, worries, fears, anger, frustrations, anything like that could go into a container that feels big enough and strong enough to hold all the things that feel distressing to you. So that's sort of a little bit of an adaptation to the container exercise that's used in trauma therapy. I think definitely don't hesitate to tell your therapist if you are feeling really overwhelmed. Again, sometimes it's obvious, sometimes it's not. And to go back to this idea of pacing, I think it's really, really important to pace yourself right now and not to push yourself beyond the capacity of what you can handle. Another thing that I think can also feel like abandonment is if you notice your therapist looking away from the screen, or if you notice maybe they cut out or you cut out and they're asking you to repeat yourself, or maybe the screen goes blank for a minute, the video cuts out, or even the internet just drops completely and you're disconnected from your therapist. With telehealth, usually what we do as therapists is we will call you right away or get in touch with you right away and try and repair the connection. But if you're feeling that, that is, I think, the reality of so many people being online right now, and technology is not a perfect solution. And so it's not the same as meeting in person. And if that happens, just try and talk to your therapist about that. And then lastly, I think something that's really important to keep in mind is if your therapist seems just a little bit off or it feels like there's something wrong, trying to be patient with that person. I think something that we are facing as therapists that's really challenging is we are in this collective trauma with you, and so we're all experiencing it at the same time. And so therapists are trained to not talk about their stuff in sessions, but I think just knowing that therapists might also be anxious and fearful and feeling helpless and out of control. And so very likely, if it seems like there's something just a little bit off, maybe they're having a hard day too. And just knowing that that is most likely not about you.
So before we wrap up, I did want to ask, Natalie, you have been doing telehealth for a few weeks now. And I just wanted to ask you, how has it been going? And have you found that it can be helpful in this time?
I think it has been helpful. I think, of course, I haven't primarily used that as a way of conducting sessions. And so...
You mean in the past, you haven't?
Right, right. Yes, in the past. I think I have worked with like one or two people that I have seen online, but generally I prefer face-to-face and never thought I would be in this situation. And so because of that, I took trainings around doing telehealth and also how to provide trauma treatment through telehealth. But to be honest, like initially, I think there was definitely some trial and error. And with my clients, we've all sort of like kind of stumbled along together. And I think most people have been understanding in the fact that we're all trying to do the best we can with a really difficult situation where there's so much uncertainty and so many things that we don't have control over. And I think it has been important to acknowledge, yeah, we both probably don't prefer this as a way of doing therapy. I think that's important. But I have definitely still been able to do some really powerful trauma work through telehealth. I'm not sure if it would be better in person or, you know, if it would be about the same, but I think it is still possible. And I think that I really want everybody that I work with or anybody that's seen at our practice to know that they are not alone and that we are still with them, here for them, and walking alongside them, even if it's looking a little bit different these days. And again, I am trying to take one day at a time because of the uncertainty. And I think it's just really overwhelming to think about how long is this going to last? And I would encourage everybody to try and just take one day at a time and try and find hope that one day that things will get better, even if they end up being different in some way, but that at some point things will change and that you will be able to see your therapist in person again. But in the meantime, you can stay connected in this way. And I do think there is power in video, even if there's been past trauma around being recorded. One, I think it helps you to get over that trigger and heal that wound and to see that it can be used in a way that is good and helpful and healing. And I think there is just power in being able to see somebody's facial expression and hear their voice at the same time. So I think all of those things make it worthwhile. And we're all in this together in this very difficult time.
Thank you for listening. We will see you next week.